looks like a clinic on how not to do things on the baseball field.
Now, the show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters with Tony Maz. Brought to you by Big Y Grocery Stores, T-Mobile, Needham Bank, Ron Bouchard's Auto Stores, Jordan's Furniture, Integrity from Marvin Windows and Doors, TestTrips.com, Acura of Auburn, Anderson McQuay, Direct Federal Credit Union, Gravely Lawnmowers, AceTicket.com, WFXT-TV, and Mohegan Sun. On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Got a month and a half. September 1st will be great when you have all those bodies here, but at the same time, man, we still have to manage. We have to take care of people, you know. That's why probably Mookie won't play tomorrow. Jackie will benefit from not playing tomorrow. So, you know, we're going to go on the run here, that we go home, we have Cleveland, then we go to Tampa, we know the turf. We still have to, you know, take care of them, and that's the biggest challenge.
So here's a question for you, Jim Murray. You too, Jimmy Stewart, and you, the Red Sox fam, wherever you are, driving home, wherever you're headed. 617-779-0985 here in the Baseball Reporters on Trivia Tuesday. How do you know when your regular season is a formality? How do you know?
When you're 50 games over 500.
And, correct, and when your manager starts talking about having managing guys' health and rest down the stretch when you have 42 games left in the season. Because that's what Alex Cora is doing now in Philadelphia, and you just heard him right there. Well, we're still going to manage guys. It's a little more tricky than you think. Blah, blah, blah. Here you go. Because he knows it's over. It's over. And you know why? Not only is it over, the lead is growing. Did you know that?
Yes, the Yankees keep losing to inferior competition.
So the Yankees lost to the Mets last night. The lead is now 10 games. 10, for crying out loud. 10 whopping games. 9 in the loss column. Remember all those games that the Yankees had to make up earlier in the year because of all those rainouts? They only have 2 left. 2 games difference between Boston and New York. 2. If the Yankees win both of those, they're still 9 out with 42 to go. 9 out with 42 to go. If the Red Sox go 500 from here on out, they will finish with 106 wins, and they will win this division going away. Okay, 617-779-0985. So as is always the case on this program, any and all thoughts on the Red Sox, anything and everything, are certainly open for discussion. But here's where I want to start tonight. There was some talk about this over the weekend. We even did a touch of it yesterday on the Felger and Maz show, but I think it's worth bringing up again now because I heard the midday program talking about it, Zolak and Bertrand, and they were getting into a discussion about the MVP of the league. And this is a discussion now that many Red Sox fans are having, Mookie Betts or J.D. Martinez. And so, look, this type of thing could come down to simply one fact, who you like better. Okay, and if you like Mookie, you'll pick Mookie. If you like J.D. Martinez, you'll pick J.D. Martinez. So I am less concerned about which guy you think is the MVP, although certainly I'll take your thoughts on it by all means. I'll tell you who mine is in a minute. What I'm more interested in is what you use to decide it. You follow me on that, Murray?
Sure.
Like, what are
your go-to statistics you're yammering about to make your case for your guy?
What are the factors that tilt you in favor of one guy or another? Okay, because I have a strong belief when it comes to this sort of thing, and this gets into a little of baseball new age versus old age.
Gotcha.
And the metrics that are now out there to measure a player's value, most notably WAR, because really that's what WAR is. It measures a player's value. The higher the WAR, the higher the value. Mike Trout has the highest WAR in Major League Baseball, generally. This year, actually, it's someone else. I think it's Mookie Betts. So is that the factor for you, or is it something else? That's really what I want to know. What is the metric? What is the deciding factor for you in deciding who the MVP of the Red Sox is, who the MVP of the league is? And there were a number of things that they were talking about in the midday program that really, honestly, to me, fly in the face of what the award is supposed to be. But so, Murray, let me ask you quickly first. If you're voting on MVP, let's just use Betts versus Martinez to make it easy. What are you using to decide the argument? What is the deciding factor for you?
Look, without statistics, the overall body of
you
work.
You can use statistics.
No,
that's fine.
No, I'm not. I'm not even going to go. Well, look, statistically, Mookie Betts is better in certain categories than J.D. Martinez, but I also look at the overall body of work. Defensively, he's a better player. He's better on the base pass. It's Mookie Betts for me. You know, look, he's a terror at the plate, and he's having a phenomenal season. But same thing for J.D. Martinez. But you get more out of the player, again, in terms of stolen bases. Defensively, there's more range there. Mookie Betts is the MVP.
Okay, Jimmy Stewart?
J.D. Martinez is the MVP because of the impact that he's had on the lineup. And I think that's noted in Betts had a good season last year. He's having a better season this year because he's got a little bit more protection later on in the lineup.
Okay, so look, this is one of those things.
I guess that's my way of saying J.D. Martinez has impacted the entire Red Sox lineup more than I think Mookie Betts has.
Okay, so this is one of those things that often comes down to semantics. Okay, and the reason I ask this is because there's wording on the ballot that, to me, should give you some shape on the argument, okay, or some framework for the argument. And the way the MVP award is worded on the ballot, it is the most valuable player to his team. And that phrase to me makes a difference. It doesn't say the most valuable player in the league. Like, I think there's a difference there. The most valuable player in the league is the best player. Like, easy. No problem. Mike Trout should be the MVP every year. He's the best player in the league. This year, you could argue Mookie Betts is the MVP. He's the best player in the league. But once you introduce that phrase to his team, you then introduce other variables, other metrics, other factors. For example, let's use Jose Ramirez of the Cleveland Indians. Okay? Jose Ramirez this year is one of, if you go by war, I think he's the third most valuable player in the American League, behind only Trout and Betts, not necessarily in that order. But if you go by like team batting stats, the Cleveland Indians without Jose Ramirez this year really might be screwed. I mean, like Lindor's a hell of a player too. He's in the discussion. Don't get me wrong. But what Ramirez is doing with the Indians this year is really pretty ridiculous. 35 home runs, 87 RBI. He's hitting .301. You know, now Lindor has 29 homers. He's had a good year. Lindor's a hell of a player. But you take Jose Ramirez out of that lineup, and I'm not sure what the Indians are. I think there's a greater loss taking Jose Ramirez out of that lineup in Cleveland than there is taking either Betts or Martinez out of the Boston lineup. Okay? In theory. So to me, Jimmy touched on the key word. For me, it's about impact. It's about the impact you have on your team's success. And I'm sorry, success is a factor. I don't think you should win the MVP if you're on a bad team. You might be the best player in the league, but how valuable can you be to your team if your team sucks? And again, that's how it's worded on the ballot. Who is the most valuable player to his team? That's always how I've tried to vote for it, and that doesn't mean I'm right, by the way. But if you wanted to give me war as a reason, my answer to you would be, well, then why do you have a vote at all? If you're just going to go by war, then let's just punch in the numbers and let the computer decide who's got the biggest war, and that's it. We don't need people to vote. I'm going to use my eyes. I'm going to make a judgment. I'm going to have an opinion, and I'm going to cast my ballot. That's what an election is. I give you my thought, my belief, my interpretation. I'm not just going to base it on war. Honestly, that is the biggest cop-out ever. Chicken using war. Well, he had the highest war. Well, then what the hell do I need you to vote for? I want you to measure the impact. Well, how do I do that? Use your eyeballs. Or talk to people who know. So to me, it's J.D. Martinez. The Red Sox have the same team they had a year ago. They added J.D. Martinez. Now they're the best offense in baseball. And have you watched the guy in the batter's box? Have you watched how hard he is to get out? All of that. He's the best hitter in the game right now. I couldn't have been more wrong about Martinez in terms of signing him. I hope that they can keep him, at least if the contract is reasonable and it doesn't require some sort of stupid commitment. was wrong. I was wrong about the impact he would have on the Red Sox. Huge. They have gone from a 93-win team to a 115-win pace. They have gone from a team that couldn't hit the ball out of the ballpark to the most productive offense in baseball. Like, all of that overnight because of J.D. Martinez. Okay? J.D. Martinez, to me, is the MVP. Murray doesn't mean you're wrong.
Yeah, I think with either guy, you can't be wrong. But maybe the strongest thing that you can put out there to for your case for Martinez is, you know, Betts went down for, what was it, 12, 15 games?
I think he missed 14 games.
So they didn't really miss a beat as a team, right?
What if I told you they went 8-6 while Mookie was out?
Okay, I knew it was. I knew they had a winning record, but I didn't know it was that close to 500. All right, so 8-6, but still, if they lost J.D. Martinez for like a month, I mean, now at this point they're so far ahead of the Yankees, it really doesn't matter. But boy, like if that happened earlier in the season, they would have been screwed.
I mean, so again, and I look at it in these terms: if you lose J.D. Martinez, who hits third?
Moreland.
I mean, again, so this is what I'm talking about.
Right?
Can Bogarts do it?
No.
Can Moreland do it? Like, all of a sudden, you have this massive hole in the middle of your lineup. Massive. And if you say to me, well, Betts could do it, my question then becomes, can he? Because Mookie Betts doesn't want to hit in there.
Right.
So, again, this is another reason.
Betts' average and power went down last year when he hit third in the lineup.
I just think J.D. Martinez is a game changer. Okay, so I want to touch on this quickly. I want to get back to the bullpen. And I know there was an event in baseball over the weekend that sent Murray into orbit. And as always, Trivia Tuesday, we'll do that in the final segment. Quickly, let's go to Ralph and Cranston. Ralph, what do you got?
Hey, Tony. You know, interesting argument. When I look at the MVP, I go back 2 years to Trout. And Trout beat out Betts. You look at that. I mean, Trout only had one category, and I think it might have been home runs, but he had more than Betts. Betts wins the Gold Glove, right? Trout didn't win it that year. And Trout's team didn't have a very good year, and Betts' team did. So when you look at the MVP, you start looking at it back to more where you're saying with Martinez. Who has the impact, the real big impact? I love Mookie Betts.
Okay, so Ralph, but this is part of the stuff I'm talking about. When you say Trout didn't win the Gold Glove that year, is Mike Trout an elite outfielder?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, so again, what does it matter that he won the Gold Glove or not? But this is part of the thing that drives me crazy. Who cares what they voted? The players vote on the Gold Gloves. They get it wrong, or the managers and the coaches do. They screw it up all the time. Trust me, I know. I covered it. They screw it up all the time. Just watch Mike Trout. He and Mookie Betts are both terrific outfielders. But Trout's probably more valuable as an outfielder because he plays center. But honestly, it's close. So, like, the Gold Glove thing, irrelevant. One guy won the Gold Glove, one didn't. To me, irrelevant. That's someone else's opinion. You watch him. You tell me. That's why the whole war thing drives me bananas. You watch these guys play every day. Where would the Red Sox be without one versus the other? Who is most valuable to his team? To me, that's where I start. Okay? That's how I vote for it. And honestly, that's how I vote for the Hall of Fame now, too. Not based on value to his team, but based on looking at him, how good a player was he compared to everyone else? The numbers? You can use the numbers to say anything. I don't care what the numbers are. I mean, they factor in a little bit. But when I watch the guy play, and if he did it for a long time, he was a Hall of Famer, that's how I decide. And I'm doing the same thing now with the MVP. J.D. Martinez is the best hitter in baseball this year. He is the best hitter in the game. When we come back, I do want to give you some more numbers on the bullpen. We'll continue the MVP discussion, too.
We have the Sox covered. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, the Sports Hub. We have the Sox covered. This is the Baseball Reporters. Tony Mazzarotta, show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
For the Red Sox. There's a high fly ball. Did he get another one? Back it goes, and yes, sir, he's done it again. J.D. Martinez, number 37. He is unstoppable. How on earth do you pitch this guy? And the Red Sox lead it 5-3, his second home run tonight.
So this is another one for me. And Dave O'Brien said it there in the Nesson broadcast. How do you pitch him? Again, if you're an opposing pitcher, J.D. Martinez gets in the box, what do you do? you, no matter what ballpark you're in, you pitch him inside, he hits it out. You pitch him away in Boston, which has a big right field, he still hits it out. Mookie, I know where I can pitch Mookie and minimize the damage. With J.D. Martinez, you can't do it. And I just think he's one of those guys that gets into the box and everybody says, I'm screwed. Everybody in the mound says, I'm screwed. I just got to hope that he swings at a bad pitch or that maybe he gets it high enough in the air that someone catches it or that instead of being an extra base hit, it's a single and someone cuts it off in the gap. That's what you have to hope for. We'll get back to your phone calls here. And there are a couple of other calls on the board. So let me get this one out of the way because this one drives me bananas too. Greg is in Lowell. Greg, what do you got?
Yeah, hey, Tony. My point is about the games over 500. It's raining really bad. Can you hear me all right?
Yeah, so I just want to say, hold on.
I'm on.
Yeah, Greg, I got to put you on hold. This is not working. Matt's in Framingham. Matt, what do you got?
Hi, Matt. So under the metric that you put forth that it's the best for your team, I would have to say it's J.D. Martinez for a couple of reasons. But he has the best numbers for one. Also, the hole he fills, like you and Stu mentioned, well, Betts kind of fills his own hole. So I'm going to go with the fact that he will be a hitting coach one day. I mean, this guy, he takes these young players aside, and he helps them with their swing. You see the improvement with JBJ. You see the improvement with Devers being able to go to the opposite field. I mean, that's what makes him the MVP to me, is that he makes the players around him better, literally.
Okay, yeah, so Matt, here's what I would say. That you know, that's part of a discussion. I don't think it's the reason you're the MVP, though. The MVP to me is about what you do in the batter's box. Okay, it's about what you do in the batter's box. And so that guy has to completely change the game when he steps in there. And it's been a while since the Red Sox had that kind of guy. Really. I mean, David Ortiz did. David Ortiz did, but he had a young cast around him. That team wasn't ready. And they did very well in that last year to win the division and make the playoffs. They did. But, you know, Martinez, I mean, he's, you know, Alex Cora compared him to Manny Ramirez in spring training, and I laughed. And I think Alex Cora may have been right. Brian's in a car. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, Tony. So I think you and Jimmy are hitting the nail on the head here. I mean, you know, there's a few factors, like bringing Alex Cora, you know, not flip-flopping him around the lineup with Mookie. But JD comes in, and you're projected to get 20 more wins than you did the year before. I just think that, I mean, it is a good argument, but I think that wins it for me.
Yeah, so, Brian, again, look, and I know everybody wants to measure everything. Okay, I know. I get it. Everything's about the numbers, the metric. Because heaven forbid that you have an opinion that doesn't actually have a number. That you can just say, how do I know? I've watched it. That's how I know. So I'm telling you, I've watched this guy, as have you. The impact he has had on that lineup is off the charts. Jake's in Wakefield. Jake, quickly.
Hey, Tony. So in the playoffs, if they can figure out how to pitch to Martinez, are the Sox done?
So, sure, yeah. I mean, I think minimizing, I shouldn't say they're done. It will make it a lot harder. Yes, but this is the problem. I'm telling you, there is no way to pitch him. There is no way to pitch him. The guy can hit. Plain and simple, there's no way to pitch him, just as there was no way to pitch Manny Ramirez or David Ortiz. You just had to minimize the damage, and you had to minimize the mistakes. Okay, 617-779-0985. We do have a couple of open lines, but I wanted to continue the discussion from last night with regard to the Red Sox bullpen because I still do think it is a potentially fatal flaw. And I looked up some more numbers on the Red Sox today. In terms of bullpens now, relief staffs, Red Sox relievers rank 11th out of 15 teams in the American League in walks per nine innings. Meaning they walk more and not less. Okay, so the team that walks the fewest ranks number one, that's Houston. The team that walks the most is number 15. And the bottom three teams in the league are the three worst teams in the league. Chicago, Kansas City, and Baltimore. Those teams are dreadful. The Red Sox rank 11th. The only team below them that's not one of the worst teams in the league is the Angels, who are 500. And the Angels have played poorly now for a long time. So the question then becomes, can you win with that kind of bullpen, with a bullpen that cannot throw strikes consistently? And I did some of this last night, but it is worth repeating. in 2004, in 2007, and in 2013. The Red Sox had three relievers on those teams, their three best relievers, all walked fewer than three batters per nine innings. And three is an important cutoff. If you're in the ones or the twos in terms of walks per nine innings, you have good control. The Red Sox had three guys on each team under three in the bullpen. And in the case of Uehara, Tozawa, Alan Embry, even Keith Folk, those guys were all in the ones. They were exceptional control and command pitchers. Exceptional. Okay? Like among the best in the game. This Red Sox team, in its top five relievers, does not have a guy who issues fewer than four walks per nine innings. It is a major problem. Their ability to throw strikes consistently and throw quality strikes is a major problem. They all have stuff, but they really don't know where it's going. And sooner or later, in the month of October, that usually bites you in the ass. Greg's in Lowell. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, Tony, can you hear me now?
I can hear you, Greg. Go ahead.
Yeah, so my point about 500 over in terms of ball was I don't believe that that's being stated correctly. They've played 120 games to date. 60 games lost, 60 games won. That would be 500. Would you agree?
No, I wouldn't. That would be 500. Yes, look, Greg, I get this question. Okay. Hold on. No, stop. I get this question all the time, and it drives me crazy. Okay? Games over 500 means the number of games you would have to lose to get to 500. That's what that stat means.
Okay. And that's why you're wrong, because guess how many they would have to lose to be at a 500 record?
I know what you're going to say, that if they had 25 more losses, they'd be a 500 team because they would automatically lose 25 more wins. I would tell you that just where they are right now is 50 over. They would have to lose the next 50 games to end up 500. Okay? That's what the stat means. So let's not turning it into an accounting equation. It's not accounting. It's just a stat. Over 500 or under 500 means how many do you have to win or lose to get back to 500? That's all it means. It's not an accounting exercise. That question drives me bananas. Frank's in Jersey. Go, Frank.
Matt, to expand on what you're saying about watching the games, all right, I watch just about every single game. And if you watch the games, you could clearly see the impact that J.D. Martinez has. When I sit there and watch, whether it's at the game or at home, it feels like every single game I'm texting somebody saying, this guy's a beast. This guy's a beast. You know, I have things to say about Betts, and it's not to take away from Betts. But J.D. Martinez, it's almost every single night the guy goes up there in the batter's box, and it's like, wow, this guy's a freak. This guy's a beast. And one last thing on this MVP debate. With WAR, I feel like the people that pound on WAR are people that are not good at watching a baseball game and evaluating players. If you go to 2013 with Cabrera and Trout, the people that said Trout was MVP, it was WAR. Cabrera was a triple crown winner. If you watch that guy hit that year, you could clearly see that he should be the American League MVP. But it's the people that pound WAR are the ones that cannot watch a game and cannot evaluate players.
Well, so Frank, I generally believe with you. I think it's a crutch. I think it's a cop-out. I think it's a lazy way to do it. He had the higher WAR. I'm going to vote for him. Okay, how was the WAR calculated? Do you know? So this is one of those things where I just go by the stat. Well, if you're just going to go by the stat, and I feel this way about managers when it comes to pinch hitting and things like that, if you're just going to do the best matchup all the time, why do I need a manager? Just punch it into the computer, and whatever the computer says, you do. That's it. What do I need a manager for? If you're going to go by WAR, why do I need you to vote? Just give it to the guy with the highest WAR. It's a math equation, right? So let's just do it that way. I would rather have human beings make the decisions. And you know what? They'll screw up sometimes. So what? So what? It's part of the deal. We make mistakes. Murray's Get Your Headlines when we come back. Something that happened in a game over the weekend prompted an unusual apology in baseball. It pissed off Murray. We'll touch on that next.
The Baseball Reporter's Tony Mazz, 98.5, the Sports Hub. This is the Baseball Reporter's.
Which makes all the sense in the world if you're the Red Sox.
With Tony Mazzarotti, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Joe Maddon's going to do everything he can to tie the game or more here with two out in the last of the ninth. David Bodie, the pinch hitter. He's been very good off the bench, 3-for-6 in this capacity.
Bodie, the dead center field. Did he get it? Did he get it? Five to Bodie!
Maybe you missed that over the weekend. I want to touch on it quickly. That is the ending of the Nationals-Cubs game on Sunday night. And if you missed this, it was an unbelievable finish. Nationals led the game 3-0. They load the bases in the ninth. Two-hit batters by Ryan Madsen, who was pitching for the Nationals at the time. They load the bases. It is a, 3-0 game. David Bote comes up as a pinch hitter. It's a walk-off grand slam to win it. Okay, walk-off grand slam to win the game. It really was a great, great baseball moment.
I mean, it gives you chills. Even just hearing it again, I got it. And I don't give a rat's ass about either of those teams. But that was an awesome, awesome moment.
Okay, so nobody knows who this David Bote kid is. But let me just tell you, he is a 25-year-old with the Cubs who this year is a pinch hitter now. Is, I think he's 4-for-7 with an OPS of like 2,000. That was his first home run.
Oh, he was the man who fell from Mars. He gave us Suffragette City. You said David Bote, not David Bowie.
David Bowie.
Boo, right. Jim. Boo.
Okay, nice try. Right. Nonetheless, Bowie then did a radio interview in Chicago. He was like, the man about town next day, as you can imagine. Yesterday, he did a radio interview in Chicago where they asked him a bunch of different questions. And then if you watch the replay of the home run, when he hits it, he kind of flips his bat up in the air and goes crazy. Right. And he sprints around the bases. It was great. It was absolutely great. So they asked him about the whole celebration and the reaction to the home run. And here's what he said.
It just kind of happened. I mean, I didn't even realize I did it until I saw it on the replay. I was like, oh, man, I did that, flip it. So, I mean, obviously meant no disrespect by any means. But I was just kind of the heat of the moment, got it good, and I was kind of wishing it out.
Okay, so again, you hear him say there, and it's the audio's not great, but I didn't even realize I did it, and I hope I didn't offend anybody there. No disrespect. Go ahead, Murray.
The horror. So I had only read this. I saw this on CBSSports.com, and I hadn't heard he sounds like almost like a scared kid. The horror. This sport can't get out of its own way with its stupid unwritten rules about disrespecting the game. What that kid's really saying is, sorry, I had fun. Sorry I had fun and I got caught up in the moment. A moment in which, again, a walk-off grand slam in the bottom of the ninth, Maz. Every kid who's ever loved baseball has played this out in their backyard at some point in their young life. I know I have. You probably did. Your kids are probably doing it this summer. A walk-off grand slam down 3. Every kid's pretended to do that. So this young player got to live this out in that moment. And he flipped his bat and he's apologizing for enjoying the moment. And there definitely are like these stuffy baseball nerds out there that don't like the bat flip. They don't like fun. And to people like that, you can F off. Fall down a flight of stairs. Like, why would you be mad about this? Why would you feel like you would need to hear an apology from a player like this who got wrapped up in the moment and it was a little bit of a bat flip? Give me more bat flips. The game needs this. And this is something, the game, like, figure it out. You have the commissioner, just a couple of months ago, Rob Manfred, whining about players needing to be more marketable. They need to be more out there. They need to show some cockiness. They need to show some individuality. But then you also have people that are protecting the gate of baseball looking at this and saying, oh, he shouldn't, that wasn't a good look. He shouldn't be flying around like an airplane after hitting the grand slam. He probably shouldn't be flipping the bat. It's people like the finger-wagging nanas that protect baseball, that cover baseball, your hardcore seam heads that get mad about this kind of thing. Like, this is what helps ruin the game. This is what makes me not want to watch games, because there should be more of this kind of thing. Oh, it's not part of the spirit of the game. Oh, God, screw you.
See, now, to my recollection, I shouldn't say it because I didn't read it all that closely. And I didn't read all the stuff in Washington where I don't think anybody in the Nationals bitched about it or anything.
No one on the team did.
But the mere fact that he had to take a preemptive measure to even mention it, that because he knew it could piss someone off, is a joke. It is. It's a joke. That's the kind of moment they should celebrate in baseball. It was great. It was unfiltered, raw enthusiasm.
And they stripped him basically like almost nude of his uniform too as he crossed his home plate. It was hysterical. It was awesome.
It was great stuff, Murray. It was great stuff. And again, and the next day he felt the need to apologize, which should tell you about the standard that the game has when it comes to those stupid ass unwritten rules.
Right. Just, I hadn't even thought about it that way. Like, I just figured there already are people bitching out, but he felt the need to take the preemptive strike to say what he had to say, because he knows that there are those out there like, oh, that's a bad look, son. You shouldn't do that. You're disrespecting the game by flipping your bat. Oh, screw you.
Oh, God, it is. It's ridiculous. Quickly, Jim's in Melrose. Go, Jim.
Hey, guys, I wanted to talk about JD, but real quick on the point you just made. I mean, I think it's disrespecting the game if you steal third base with a 10-run lead in the eighth inning. To me, that's disrespecting the game. Flipping the bat isn't. He's a young kid. He was excited. I don't think they'd hold that. They shouldn't hold that against him.
Well, Jim, look, and I don't think they're going to, and I'm going to let you go just because we're up against it. You know, to me, I think anyone who sees the video knows he wasn't trying to show someone up. And you know what? Even if he was, like Jose Bautista in the playoffs, and I'm not sure he was either, but it came off that way, I don't care.
No, bat flips are awesome. They should be celebrated.
I mean, part of the problem with baseball is there's not enough passion. Every other sport has passion. Baseball doesn't have enough of it. We need more. We need more. Let the kids celebrate. It was a great moment. The Trivia Tuesday coming up next. And I'll tell you, first five callers to the Pride Motor Group. Jimmy, is it the contest line or is it the regular line tonight?
Contest line.
Okay, contest line, 617-931-0985. You'll have the chance to participate if you can answer three questions correctly. You will get a $100 gift card for Seasons 52 Wine Bar and Grill, and you will be automatically entered for an overnight trip to see Boston play New York in September in New York. You'll get two round-trip train tickets, a night's hotel stay, two game tickets. All of that, we will draw the winner for that. On September 5th, we already have 10 people entered in the drawing. You could be the 11th. Trivia Tuesday's next.
The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mazz, 98.5 The Sports Hub. The show that Red Sox Nation turns to first. The Baseball Reporters, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
It's Trivia Tuesday on The Baseball Trivia Reporter. Tuesday. This is where your baseball knowledge can lead to fabulous prizes. And now, here's your host, Tony Mazzarotti.
Okay, you guys know the drill. Here we go. Same deal every week. If you can answer three questions correctly, you'll get a $100 gift card to Seasons 52 Wine Bar and Grill. You'll be automatically entered into a drawing to get two game tickets to see Boston play in New York in September. You'll also get two game tickets, a night's hotel stay. It's a pretty good get. And we've had 10 winners so far, so 10 other people in the drawing at the moment. And we will we won't draw the winner until September, but you have a chance at that. And we take first five callers or until we have a winner in order of call. We'll start tonight with Mark and Dedham. Mark, you there?
Yes, sir. Fire away, Anthony.
Okay, so here we go. We've been talking a lot lately about the bullpens, Mark. Bullpens all over the game. Name the Hall of Fame reliever and closer who went by the nickname Goose.
Richard Goose Gossage.
Rich Gossage is correct. Good job. There you go. Nice work. You get the first one right. Okay, number two, spell Uehara. As in Koji Uehara. Spell Uehara.
Uehara.
Correct. Very good. That's two for two. Well, we could have a fast, fast winner here. Hey,
I hope he gets it wrong.
Hey, Mark, have you won before?
I have not. I've called too many times, though. Okay. I'm ready.
Okay. So you've gotten to this stage before, haven't you? How old are you?
46 years young.
46 years old.
I've called before.
Yes, you have. You're a liar.
Why are you killing his momentum?
I'm just trying to, you know.
He's trying to throw him off. I like it.
It's a stalling tactic, Jimmy. Okay, Mark, here you go. In October 1990, the Red Sox clinched the division on the final day of the season with a win over the Chicago White Sox. The game ended with a dramatic diving catch in the right field corner by Red Sox right fielder Tom Brunansky. Okay? It's a famous play. What former White Sox shortstop and World Series winning manager hit the ball?
Ozzie Guillen.
Ozzie Guillen is correct. You believe that? Three for three. Mark, stay on the line. We'll get all your information. What a letdown that was.
You know, Rich Gossage got the name nickname Goose because he was a known ass grabber in and around Manhattan in the late 70s. Low ball, too.
That's so disappointing. That guy went three for three.
Of course, Brunansky's catch was...
I can't even get through it. He's cracking himself up.
Had a mass moment.
His nickname was Bruno.
Of course, the manager of that team was Joe Morgan. Local Joe Morgan, not that other guy who was on the ESPN broadcast. Low ball, too.
All right, so I'll tell you what. Since we're just,
you got to make it more difficult. How many more weeks is this going to go, Maz?
We're drawing September 5th, so
yeah, we only get a couple more.
Yeah,
we only get a couple more. I thought a couple of those were tough. Guess not. Okay, so let me ask you, jackasses, a question. A lot of JD Martinez talk. I just put this one on my list.
Okay.
He currently has 37 home runs, so he's going to get 40. Other than Manny Ramirez, who's the last right-handed Red Sox hitter to get 40 home runs in a season?
Right-handed.
Yep. Jimmy, you want to play some music for me or something? Do something fun?
Oh, I don't know. Jimmy Fox?
Jesus Christ. How far back are you going to go? No.
It wasn't Jim Rice, was it?
Why don't you pick someone from the 1800s, Murray? No, it wasn't Jim Rice either, Jimmy Stewart. What about you two nimwits?
Jack Clark.
Nope.
Ooh, good guess, though. Jack Clark.
What a bust.
It was in the 80s. I'll give you a hint. It was in the 80s.
Hard-hitting Mark Whitten.
Nope.
Mark was it Don Baylor?
No. Oh, you guys suck.
Tony Armas.
I didn't write the question.
Very good. Hey! Tony Armas is correct. Tony Armas is correct.
Good of course, the father of Tony Armas Jr., who was involved in a Red Sox trade later on. So, right-handed pitcher. Got him from the Yankees. Low ball three.
Good job, Jimmy. The big matchup of the game is brought to you by Big Y World Class Market. Big Y has all the bases covered to get your game ready this baseball season. Stop in tonight on your way home. As I said, Red Sox open a series against the Phillies tonight in Philadelphia. Two-game series, another two-gamer against the Phillies. Nick Pivetta, whoever that is.
Isn't that Dick Pivetta's son?
Very good, Jimmy. Nick Pivetta.
Outside, 2-2.
Pitching for the Phillies against the Red Sox. Very little history against this guy. Red Sox only have 16 at-bats total. Sandy Leon is 1-for-2. No Red Sox hitter has more than one hit against Nick Pivetta. Pivetta with a P. Rick Porcello against the Phillies. Asdrubal Cabrera, 304 average. Carlos Santana, 293 with a 931 OPS and three home runs. What is the American translation of Asdrubal?
Ass dribble?
there you go. In any case, so's your matchup.
The Baseball Reporters, 98.5, The Sports Hub.